Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And so, since there's some new people here, I always like to take an opportunity to show my pictures, especially when new people are on, because it's a visual demonstration of what it looks like to have an experience with the miraculous, which is what we're after, right? We're here because we need to have a miracle. In fact, we're told nothing except an act of providence, which is God's intervention, right, to come in. And so, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about that convincing testimony is the witnessing of people's return to health. So I share my pictures because I think it's convincing testimony. So I'm going to share them and I'll kind of buzz through them quick. And are you able to see them? Okay, great. So this is, this was me after I had given birth to my daughter. She's over 20 now. She'll be 21 in May. And I was obese. I had been on and off overweight all my life, but I had periods of management and control and losing weight. And at this point, though, having been pregnant and given birth to her, I was obese again. But I knew in my, if you would have given me a lie detector test, I would have sworn to you that I was done eating because I had everything I ever wanted. And why should I eat? I thought that I ate because I was sad. And here I was, I had this beautiful new baby, loving husband, great marriage. And, but I didn't lose the weight. In fact, here I am in the pink, I got bigger. There's my husband still loving me. I look pretty miserable though. There. I mean, I knew what I was feeling like. Misery was creeping in. It didn't matter that I had all the things I wanted. And this was us throughout the years, times when I would lose weight, always to regain weight. Many of the pictures that you would see were around a table because that's what we did. That was a big part of my recreation. Food starts making the decisions. When you're owned by food, food starts deciding for you what you like to do. I didn't even know what I liked to do anymore. Food said, you like to go out to dinner, right? Going out to dinner was fun. And it is for normal people. For me, it crossed a line. So this is me in the red having a party in my house that day. I mean, I didn't look like I was having a party. I could barely brush my hair, could barely brush my teeth. My house was a mess. I was a mess. In the sunglasses, I'm on vacation. I'm a couple of days away from relapsing again. I was the abstinent here. And there's a big pitfall that Janet shares. Sometimes going away on vacation, going away, if you're not spiritually fit, it's a dangerous time. And I wasn't spiritually fit there, and I picked up. This is in the leopard sweater. This is the worst. This was like where it really hit the worst point in my life. With this disease. Again, I had another baby, a new baby. So happy to have him, wanted him more than anything. He came after a lot of loss for us, and I could barely hold him. Because of my size of my body, I couldn't get my arms around him, and he was extraordinarily active, and I couldn't keep up with him, and I would cry. And that to me is just a torturous state to be living in. When you have everything you want and you're in your own hands, you feel like you're pulling it down around you. The picture next to it, you could see I had already lost some weight. I was actually in recovery at this point. And on my way, it just takes a body a long time to catch up. This is me and my sisters, my sister-in-laws and my sister. Again, there was a drink in my hand, oftentimes a drink in my hand. I felt like there was a glass wall between me and the people that loved me. Every time I showed up an event, I showed up with, 30 years, 40 years of all the stuff, real or imagined. I showed up to every event with a lot of resentment, a lot of grudges. It was like a list I kept in my pocket. And this is me. Both pictures I'm recovered, by the way. And then I'm with my mom in the picture in the gray. I was at my daughter's bas mitzvah. I was recovered. And unlike the picture that I just showed before, I was connecting to everybody at that event. I felt alive. The resentments were gone. I did not eat compulsively. I was paying a fortune for a big, elaborate affair. and I ate my small little basic plate that I eat everywhere when I go away, salmon, broccoli, and a salad. And it didn't matter that I was paying for it. There was a room for dessert, and I didn't even care less. And then the more recent picture is again me and my mom, and you could see we've gotten older. But my weight is down, and it's been consistently down. This is me for the last number of years. The miracle is every one of those dresses fits me, and I know it without even worrying. In fact, to prove it, I wore it a couple months ago. One of those dresses, I just pulled it out and wore it. This is me and my family, a more recent picture. We're happy, and I'm not in bondage to the food anymore. And this was just a side by side to show my husband and myself, many years apart. But I like to show it because here's what happens generally when I show the pictures. People lean in a little closer. They listen with a little bit more of an open ear. And not because of, like, mark my words, there's nothing here that I did that was unique that I made up. It's available to every single person here. And that's what I hope you're leaning in for the directions. That come from the 12 steps of recovery. And specifically, usually we talk from the big book, but tonight we're gonna get into the AA 12 and 12, step 12. And it is jam-packed. There's a lot of information in it. There's no way I'm gonna finish tonight. So I'll get as far as I get, and then we'll kind of stop it and we'll take questions. Okay, so if you've got your AA 12 and 12, we're going to open up right up to step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics or to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So there's three parts to step 12. One, spiritual awakening, having had a spiritual awakening. Two, carrying the message to other addicts, and three, which is like huge, practicing these principles in all our affairs. That's like the biggest component of this. Page 106 says, to me, it asks the big question, what do you mean when you talk about a spiritual awakening? What does that even mean? And the answer comes on the bottom of the page, and it continues onto the top, onto page 107. And it's going to basically, I'm going to run through it. But when a man or woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. So it's a gift, right? And we know where it comes from. It comes from our higher power. It's given to us. We don't do it ourselves. We can make ourselves available to it, but we don't give ourselves the gift. Nor does any other human being give us this gift. We can carry the message, but we're not able to grant someone this gift. He has been set on a path which tells him he's really going somewhere. So we have this like new direction, and we know that we're going someplace with it. That life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed. And it further goes on to say that he finds himself in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, which he had thought himself quite incapable, right? So it's like we get a degree, a certificate almost, in being honest now. And we know it because if you've reached this point in this transformation, you don't feel right. When you're dishonest, you can feel, I feel it. When I behave in a way that's dishonest, intolerant, selfish, I don't feel good. and I feel it quicker, and quicker. My tolerance for living outside of my ideals has actually diminished. My tolerance for other people increased, but my tolerance for my own living outside of this code, I've become much more sensitive to it. I don't like how it feels. So now let's look at this, right? So when someone asks, what does it mean to be recovered? That's it. This is it. This is what it means. We can do things, feel things, and believe things that we have never been able to do, feel, or believe on our own. We feel alive inside. That's what it says. Like we've been awakened. We're alive inside. We have direction. Our lives feel meaningful and filled with purpose. We become honest, like I said, tolerant, which is not so sensitive and touchy. And we genuinely are concerned with others more than we are about ourselves. This is described as a free gift that we make ourselves ready to receive by practicing the 12 steps. And then the chapter gives us a quick description of the steps, which I think is great, and we could do it real quick. Page 107, step one shows us an amazing paradox. We found that we were totally unable to be rid of the alcohol obsession until we first admitted that we were powerless over it, right? So we don't even begin until we can say that I give up. I can't do it, right? Step two, we saw that since we could not restore ourselves to sanity, some higher power must necessarily do so if we are to survive. So we know we can't do it ourselves, and we say, you know what? There's got to be something else. Step three, we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step four, we commenced to search out the things in ourselves which had brought us to physical, moral, and spiritual bankruptcy. So we begin to do this idea of searching out, right, those flaws in us. And it's going to continue that because it's just beginning here. It's a practice that we're going to repeat over and over and over again. And step five, inventory taken alone wouldn't be enough. We knew we would have to quit the deadly business of living alone with our conflicts. I just think that's really, that in and of itself is a pretty powerful thing, that it is deadly for us to live alone with our conflicts. We have to have another party. We have to have God, and we have to actually have other people bear witness to our difficulties. Step six, many of us balked because we did not wish to have all our defects of character removed, because we still loved some of them too much, yet we knew we had to make a settlement with the fundamental principle of step six. So we decided that while we still had some flaws of character we could not yet relinquish, we ought nevertheless to quit the stubborn, rebellious hanging on to them. We said to ourselves, this I cannot do today, but I can stop crying out, no, never. And I think that's a big part of the step six, that although there are certain things in our character that it's like, I don't know if I can stop it now. I don't say things like, no way, I will never stop that, right? It's like we're like, okay, we're kind of willing to examine the fact that we're not gonna be able to cling to our way. Step seven, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings as He could or would under the conditions. So we leave it in God's hands. In step eight, we continued our house cleaning. We were in conflict, not just with ourselves, but with people and in the world. We had begun to make our peace, and so we listed the people we had harmed and became willing to set things right. And step nine, we made direct amends to those we're concerned. Step 10, We began to get a basis for daily living and then realized we were going to have to continue to take inventory. Like I said in step four, this is just a thing that we're starting to do. We're going to continue it. And then when, if we're wrong, we just promptly admit it. And this is something we do it over and over and over again. Those of us who, you know, hope to be here for the long haul, get used to regular amends for sure. Step 11, we saw that if a higher power had restored us to sanity and enabled us to live with some peace of mind in a sorely troubled world, then such a higher power was worth knowing better by as direct contact as possible. And I love this next part. It says the persistent use of meditation and prayer. Persistent means we're going to keep working it. We found did open the channel so that where there had been a trickle, there now was a river. And again, I think it's so important to talk about persistent. People will often say, I don't feel God all the time. I'm struggling to feel God. And we're reminded, persistent, persistent, keep doing it. It's called a prayer practice because it means that you're going to repeatedly do it over and over and over again, and it improves over time. So now here is the perfect explanation of step 12 on page 109. From great numbers of such experiences, we could predict that the doubter who still claimed that he hadn't got the spiritual angle and who still considered his well-loved AA group, the higher power, would presently love God and call him by name. So I love that. It's something that I experienced myself and I've witnessed it experiencing in other people. It happens for others. At some point, we stop over explaining the details of our conception of God. It kind of becomes irrelevant to this dialogue. We have a conception of God. We feel it in our heart. We know it, and we stop using placeholders and substitutes, and we just call this source of power God. We just call it by name. And with the understanding that your conception can be entirely different from mine, right? We can all have a different conception, but we come to love God and we long to live in ways in which we can please God and feel closer to him. And that's really what a spiritual awakening is, that we feel closer to our creator and we want to live that way. Okay, so that's the first part of step 12, the spiritual awakening, right? And now let's move on to the next part, right? Carrying the message to other compulsive eaters and alcoholics, right? Page 109, even the newest of newcomers finds undreamed rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic. You know, we start getting well and we begin to care deeply about those that are still suffering. So even before progressing all the way through the steps ourselves, we begin to get the benefits of being in a 12-step program. And we want to start helping other people. If you're new in the program, you can do this through outreach calls. You can do it by texting people. You can do it by being a brother or sister of support in the fellowship, that we actually begin to do this before we're in step 12, right? Not necessarily sponsoring, but certainly supporting other newer people along the way. Page 110 describes the ways that we can carry the message. One, listen at meetings, not just to receive, but to offer reassurance and support. So I think that's why it's so important to have your camera on. Because if your camera's on, and you're on a Zoom meeting, your presence is felt and it's seen. You're helping other people. I know that when I share, I have to tell you, when I share and I see faces smiling faces, nodding faces, human and interaction. I feel supported. I don't feel alone. When I see just screens, and I mean no disrespect. Of course, if you're in a place and this is the best you can do, but I'm just going to share that when I just see blank screens with the name or with the number, it doesn't feel quite as connected, right? So when I see faces, just like at a meeting, I know I'm not alone. And that's the purpose of being at meetings with fellows, because we're not supposed to be doing this alone. Okay, number two, here's another way that we can practice this. We speak when it's our turn. We're told we speak when it's our turn. And sometimes people say, well, I'm shy, or I don't know that I have anything good to say. We're to be encouraged. We're to encourage each other that when you're at a meeting and you have an opportunity to speak, you can speak. You might be shy, you might be self-conscious, but if we speak honestly and with the intention of being useful, then we can be sure that God will give us the right words. That's how I feel. If your intention is to be of use to other people, to connect in, God's going to help you say something that's beneficial for people. I say, if you're going to offer support, be hopeful, be positive through your words. Of course, you can ask questions, but generally, a regular meeting, like a workshop, has a little bit of a different feel, but a regular meeting where people are speaking, it's not really the place where you just go and kind of vomit all over the group, like, and just, kind of like just spew all your garbage and say, well, I'm just speaking my truth. Speaking your truth isn't a part of how we carry the message at a meeting. That's definitely, it's important to be truthful, but if you have something to get off your chest and speak your truth, it's best to do that with your sponsor, right? Coming to a meeting, if you want to offer 12-step work, you can certainly voice that you're struggling with something. You can ask for ways of support, and you can also offer ways of support. The meeting is where we come to get solutions, where we come to ask questions and give answers and get solutions. The text then tells us that they can't share then. If you can't share then, you still can carry the message. Guess what? If you're in a position and you still can't even speak here, you still can do 12-step work. Number three, we can be the ones to take on the unspectacular but important tasks that make good 12-step work possible. And perhaps it says perhaps arranging for the coffee after the meeting. We're so many skeptical, suspicious newcomers have found confidence and comfort in the laughter and the talk. And this is the 12-step work in the very best sense of the word, because it's fellowship and friendship. And that can be done, in a face-to-face meeting. There were people who were just so friendly to me, who were just always able to greet and say, hey, how are you? And we can actually do that in this Zoom virtual world. It makes me think of the people who post in the chat box positive things like happy to see you here, or how are you doing, or welcome to the newcomers. It's the same kind of thing as the people who hung around the coffee pot, right? We can do it here too. We might be a little more creative now. We have to make a point to welcome newcomers. You can take down, if you want to know how can I do 12-step work and I'm not even near through the steps yet, take down numbers, right? Write down people's numbers. Offer fellowship and friendship. Make yourself approachable. That is 12-step work. Okay, so now page 111 highlights some difficulties and growing pains that we encounter when we're doing 12-step work. One, we may set our hearts on getting a particular person sobered up, and after doing all we can for months, we see him relapse. Perhaps this will happen in succession of cases, and we may be deeply discouraged as to our ability to carry the message. And I think everyone who's ever sponsored has had this difficulty, has experienced this kind of heartbreak. You know, it is. It's heartbreaking when you have a relationship with someone, when you grow to care and you love a sponsee, and they relapse and they walk away from the program. You know, I've had that experience where I felt really close to some people, and we worked so hard together. They worked hard. I worked hard. I felt like they had made some headway. And then something happened, you know, they stopped working the program, they stopped doing it, they relapsed, and they walked away. And I'll tell you what though, if you do this work right, if they need it, they come back. And many of the people that I had actually sponsored and they've been able to make it to recover, it wasn't their first go round. They came back again. They came back again. And if not with me, they found their way to someone else. And that is an incredible thing. So we never know, right? We leave it in God's hands. God's in charge. We just do our absolute best. And really, we're like not to give up. Don't give up. Don't take it personal. You know, you can look to see what could I have done to maybe be more effective in my approach. But ultimately, it's really that person's free will and God's plan, right? Okay, number two, we may encounter the reverse situation in which we're highly elated because we seem to have been successful. We get a lot of people getting well, right? And here the temptation is to become rather possessive of these newcomers. And I definitely think that I've felt that way too. We start thinking that we can counsel them in all areas of their lives, things that we've got no business counseling them about. Well-intended, perhaps, but we have to remember that a sponsee, although we can care about them and have a relationship with them, they're not our children. These are grown-ups. You are grown-ups, right? Nobody's my baby. Nobody's my child. They are adults who, like us, have experiences and perspectives. We can make suggestions, but should consistently remind them to go to God for the answers. So when people bring me their problems and it's outside the scope of my experience with the 12 steps, I always try to suggest bring this to God. And if it's a medical issue, bring it to your doctor, right? I think those are two really important things. If it's a financial issue, bring it, you know, bring it to a financial advisor. If it's a legal issue, bring it to a lawyer, right? I'm not going to start doling out advice on matters that I know nothing about. You know, sometimes we get asked to give advice, and while it's flattering, it's not good for either parties. It's not good for the sponsor, and it's not good for the sponsee. To start giving too much counsel. Okay, here's another area that we have to be careful of. Number three, or we may carry the message to so many that we're placed in a position of trust and we're presented with the temptation to overmanage things. And sometimes this causes rebuffs and other consequences which are hard to take. So this is where, you know, I would say like in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, this is where traditions can help us, as well as having recovery partners. Because I can fall into this category. I will tell you right now. I would like read this, I was like, yep. Overmanage. I want to overmanage. You know, sometimes people have responded to certain things I've shared. They like it, right? Which is great. Sometimes the responses, though, have been critical. And it's like, where did you get that from? I didn't hear that before. Or they come with a counter kind of argument. And you know, and it can feel like a snub. If I'm not too careful, I can feel like I'm being snubbed and insulted. Not everybody is going to be pleased with every word we say, right? But it's always a good opportunity for us to examine our motives. Am I trying to be useful and helpful, or am I trying to seek approval? In my heart, if my motive is to be helpful and useful, and even still someone doesn't find it helpful nor useful, I can be okay with it. But if I was saying it because I want public approval, then I tend to take it more personal when it's not met with approval. These difficulties are described as only the pains of growing up, right? So these are growing pains, and nothing but good can come from them if we turn more and more to the entire 12 steps for the answer. So actually, the 12 steps teach me how to practice step 12. Isn't that funny, right? So I'm gonna use step 12, the 12 steps that I've learned all the way along, to help me as I carry the message. I'm gonna actually do it in agreement with these principles and these ideals. What does that mean? One, I am powerless over other people's recovery, right? Step one. Step two, I believe that God is the only one who can restore anybody that I work with. I am not able to restore anybody to sanity. And number three, we put those fellows in God's hands, right? We're just there to do God's work. We are not God in step 12. So I think that's really good news, because if you're worried about the awesome responsibility of sponsoring someone, no worries. No worries. You're not in charge of them getting well. Your job is to just do your best. Just do your best. All right. So now the rest of the chapter, which is meaty, the next 14 pages, are all about the third part of step 12. Practicing these principles in all our affairs. Okay, page 111. Now comes the biggest question yet. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Okay, what are these affairs? What are they talking about anyway? Number one, family. That's the first one. Can we bring the same spirit of love, tolerance into our sometimes deranged family lives that we bring into our AA group? I laughed when I read that. My deranged family life. Can we have the same kind of confidence and faith in these people, right? In my family, who have been infected, right? And sometimes crippled by my own illness. Can I give them the same kind of confidence and faith that I give to my sponsor? That's what I'm told. I'm actually supposed to have the same think about this. I'm supposed to have the same confidence and faith in my husband. Yikes. My kids. Yikes. My mom, my sister, my brother, as I do in my sponsor. Whoa. That's big. That's for me. That's really big, because I like to run everything by my sponsor, and I'm not so quick to run everything by my family. But here I'm told, right, I'm supposed to actually have the same regard for my family as I do for my sponsor. I've often found it's easier, I find it much easier to cut fellows some slack than it is to cut my family that same kind of slack. It's much harder for me to give my family a free pass than it is for me to give fellows. Our families are told, for our families, we are told to have love, tolerance, confidence, and faith, right? Wow, for my family. No wonder why I run into conflict so often, because I don't always practice that, right? I don't always practice that. Certainly room for improvement for me. Okay, number two, what's another type of affair? My job, right? Our occupations. Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our daily work? And I would say, what does that mean? Meaning, at work, am I constantly thinking of others? Because remember, that's the spirit of this, that I'm supposed to always be thinking of other people. Number three, the world at large. Now we're going to talk global. Can we meet our newly recognized responsibilities to the world at large? Okay, what are my new responsibilities? To live in agreement with God's will and to demonstrate that we have been restored to happy and productive lives, that we can contribute and not just take. So that's what we're supposed to give to the world at large, that we're not just taking all we can from the world around us, but we're actually contributing to the world. And I would say, like, you know, one of the most simplistic ways that I can do this is, you know, I leave the grocery store, I'm in a rush. Do I return my cart or do I leave it in the middle of the parking lot because I'm just too busy, right? But if I'm really practicing these principles in all my affairs, like even in the world at large, I'm not leaving my cart to roll around the supermarket parking lot to bang into someone else's cart, right? If I'm caring about the world at large, I am walking into my school and I notice a piece of litter on the ground, I pick it up, right? Because I'm caring about my entire world. And four, what other affairs are we concerned with? Our religion, the religion that we choose. Can we bring new purpose and devotion to the religion of our choice? So we're always encouraged to pursue our religious backgrounds and to see how, you know, our religious affiliations, and to see, can we bring purpose and devotion here too? Nothing we do in the 12 steps should be in conflict with our religious practices. It should only support it. All right, we know that life is made up of times where we experience failure as well as success. Can we experience failure without despair? That's the next question that we're asked. Can we have achievement without growing prideful, right? So that's really important. So when life gives me hard blows, do I get full of despair and I lose all hope? And when everything's going great, do I feel like so overly proud of myself and my accomplishments that I really forget where they come from? Page 112 explains how it is that we can fall short. Okay, our troubles first begin with indifference. So here's problems that people face. We become indifferent. We're sober and we're happy in our AA work. Things go well at home, in the office. We naturally congratulate ourselves on what later proves to be far too easy and superficial point of view. We temporarily ceased to grow because we feel satisfied that there's no need for all of AA's 12 steps for us. We feel like, yep, I'm good. We're doing fine on just a few of them. And in the slang, they actually call it doing the first step and the 12th step, and they call it two-stepping, right? And that's where a lot of people run into problems. They just two-step. And I would say in OA, what does it look like? Oh, I got my food plan and I sponsor. That's it. That's what I do. I have a food plan and I sponsor people. And so what happens? Well, when we feel life is dull and we're disappointed by our regular small lives, this is really dangerous. This is a dangerous spot for us. And I would say, if you're wondering if you're heading in that direction, ask yourself if you're being consistent in your nightly review. Ask yourself, when was the last time you had to do a 10 step? Ask yourself, when's the last time you had to make an amends? If you're not doing those things, you're probably two-stepping through your program, through life. Are you looking to grow spiritually? Are you spending time in prayer and meditation? Are you doing the bare minimum? And the great danger is that our disease is progressive, and coasting will not outrun the avalanche that will eventually come, right? That's what's going to happen. My disease is progressive, and eventually life will present a problem life will present a problem. Because eventually we all get a big catastrophe. That's just part of the human experience. Page 113, what then? Have we alcoholics got or can we get the resources to meet these calamities which come to so many? Can we transform these calamities into assets, sources of growth and comfort to ourselves and those about us? Well, we surely have a chance if we switch from two-stepping to 12-stepping. We've got a chance if we do all of the steps. Okay, page 114, our basic troubles are the same as everyone else's. But when an honest effort is made to practice these principles in all our affairs, well-grounded AAs seemed to have the ability by God's grace to take these troubles in stride and turn them into demonstrations of faith. And I have experienced life's difficulties. I would imagine if I asked those of you, raise your hand if you've had some life difficulties, I would imagine everybody's hand is going up, right? It's called being human. Thank you. I'm so happy to see human hands. I've had issues with my kids, right? I've had issues with my mom, with my job. My gosh, the pandemic, people, right? We've all had this great global pandemic. I would say that those difficulties were all things where my recovery didn't just survive, didn't just allow me to survive, but in fact thrived. I felt like in those times of difficulty, my well-being, I actually thrived, and my recovery got stronger. The principles we learned in this program allow us to somehow go through these times with optimism, serenity, faith, and purpose. And I would even say, I noticed people in the outer world who don't have addiction. I think a lot of them had a harder time in this pandemic than those of us with a 12-step program of recovery. I could see it when people returned to work. You could hear about mental health crisis rampant. We could hear lots of people gained a lot of weight, people who aren't addicts. Drinking went up, divorce rate went up. All sorts of problems, and so I thank God I've got 12 steps, because when those life's problems came and they come, I have a set of directions by which I can live and live happily. So at this point, I'm going to put a bookmark in because there's so much here and we've got 10 minutes and I would love to be able to stop and have time for questions.